Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, August 16th, 2024. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. Being an activist brings an emotional burden. The issues we deal with are intense, difficult, and sometimes without any immediate solution. And often, we try to deal with these issues through logically planning a strategy and communicating issues using words. It's an intellectual process, but with a lot of underlying emotional baggage. Today, on Rabble Radio, we're re-releasing an episode from May 2020 in which Victoria Fenner sat down with Alisa Lee to talk about climate grief and how activists can better take care of themselves. This interview was originally a part of Rabble's series on climate hope in the time of the pandemic. Here is that conversation. Take a listen.
Currently, my work centers around holding community grief rituals in Vancouver and also doing rites of passage work with girls and adults. And I landed on both of these because I'm the kind of person who, when I have incredible transformative experiences, I just want to enable that for other people. And so these are both experiences that really changed my life and particularly moving me into a place where a place of deep embodiment and moving myself into a place of being over doing. And from that place of being, it's so clear in my body what the next step is and what is right for me and how to move forth in this world. And so that's been the greatest gift for me, really, for my whole being. And so that's what I want to provide for other people as well.
Now, when you talk about these transformative events, were they the kind of dramatic sort of one-time thing that really opened things up for you? Or was it like a gradual process?
I would say both. So for example, for the grief rituals, along my life, and I came across this grief ritual, which is based on the work of Joanna Macy. I came across that in my late 20s. And at that time, I had gotten into the first really deeply meaningful adult relationship that I'd been in, a romantic relationship. And at that time, I noticed that there were events that really warranted deep expression from me. It could be sorrow, it could be shock, there were ways that I wanted to support my partner, not just my partner, in other events and relationships too, that were really heartbreaking. When what I was noticing was I couldn't feel. And so I was at the point of really wondering if something was wrong with my heart. And so serendipitously, I signed up for this workshop of Joanna Macy's and moved through the workshop. And in the grief ritual that she offers, I literally felt something crack in my heart. It really felt like my heart actually cracked open. And I just, for the first time, had an embodied sense of compassion. You know, I knew what it meant in my head. I could cognitively understand it, but it wasn't until that ritual that I was like, now I get it. I get what this feels like in my body. And now I have a blueprint and I can't go back.
Can you just tell us more about Joanna Macy and how, what her work is about and how it connects to your work about climate grief?
Yeah, so Joanna Macy, she's an incredible elder, and she has created a body of work called The Work That Reconnects. The Work That Reconnects is a body of work that is full of embodied activities and rituals that really help activists move from a place of headiness, and this is what I should do, and maybe even what I need to do to fight the good fight. And it shifts us into a place of really being and understanding who I am as an earth being. And therefore, I'm moving from a place of I am, not necessarily I should and doing. And so it allows us to re-motivate from a place of deep feeling and feeling our gratitude for the earth and our love for this earth, and how deeply interconnected we are with all of life. Because we are so interconnected, obviously we would feel grief knowing that something is happening with the earth, knowing there's loss happening. And so I think before Joanna, there wasn't much available for people to really feel into how deeply they are not just connected, but that they are earth and earth beings, and we are nature. And therefore, then that is why we care, and that is why we do our good work. And so going through the work of the Reconnects, some people are remotivated if they feel burnt out. Many find new ways of doing because they are a bit changed in how they are being in the world as well.
So when we're talking about grief work and we're talking about the kinds of issues that you're dealing with, it's very common for people to look at these in their own individual lives as, you know, us as a private individual. But there's not very many places which connects what's going on with us in terms of inside our psyche to the rest of the world. You know, so the whole idea of grief work for activists, it would puzzle some people, I think. How do you navigate that territory?
Well, I think we are entering into a new era, maybe for lack of a better word, where we are becoming more emotionally aware, maybe emotionally intelligent. I know children for sure are learning about emotional and social intelligence in school now. And even this idea of going to see a counselor or a therapist is much more accepted nowadays. And there's a lot of trauma-informed work being done now. And so it's out there, you know, it's much more in the mainstream than prior, you know, 5 years ago. And so that is available. And with that comes the awareness that there's an emotional layer. There's an emotional layer to everything that we do. And so that sets the seed for moving into connecting with the emotions around activist work. And also another avenue for activists to move into the more of the emotional side is reaching burnout, you know, getting to a place, maybe not even burnout, but getting to a place of like knowing that what we're doing or how we're doing it, it's not fully working. And a lot of this comes to the disillusionment of a lot of activists, you know, who have lots of high hopes when they start this work. You know, they want to fight the good fight. They have beautiful hearts and great intentions. And then in doing it, they're disillusioned. And it's the progress might be slower than they wanted. There's maybe a lot more red tape than they realized. And it's hard. It's hard work that can really be degrading bit by bit. And so that's another way people enter this realm, really by like exhaustion or need.
Is grief around what's happening to our earth, is that something which is a different kind of grief now that activists and people who care about the earth, which is all of us, hopefully, is there something new about that, or is it sort of part and parcel of grief work that you do with activists over a number of different subjects?
I would say it's different because I hold general grief rituals that welcome any kind of grief. I've also done grief rituals for people of color, and I've also done grief rituals specifically for grieving the earth. And each has their own flavor. And what I've noticed about the ritual for earth grief is that it's just huge. And it's so huge that it's often nonverbal in the ways that we try to express it, because people say that it's hard to even find the words to express that enormity of grief. If you really were to let yourself go there, of hurt of our home planet and all the interconnected pieces of the web that we are a part of. So with that, I would say it's really important for humans to witness other humans in our grieving, whether it is climate grief or any kind of grief, that in my experience, that's different. Like I have tried in different times running to the woods in my grief and really believing that that's where I would find my solace. And yet there's a particularity in being seen and understanding deep, like being deeply understood and seen because there's another human on the other end. who has the same experiences of being human. That is actually very particular. It's not to say that you can't, and I do definitely find solace and a lot of healing in nature. And being in a grief ritual with another human, a group of humans, it hits something that I have found that other avenues don't. And so it's really interesting that Dr. Alan Wolfelt, he's a grief specialist. He specializes in complex grief. He's in the States, and he runs a center for loss in the States. And he actually talks about the difference between grief, grieving, and mourning. And he says that mourning is the private expression of loss and pain due to loss, and grieving is actually the public expression of that, and that both are important. And we often forget about that public show and acknowledgement, that we have funerals and memorials and things like that, but often it sometimes isn't enough. And I haven't so far heard of a memorial for the earth. You know, like, we're not there yet, and yet we have grief. We have grief about a lot of things. And so it's really important and healthy for us to have public community held spaces for people to be with and process and express and be witnessed and held in that pain.
So there's not just the issue of grief here too. Climate change and watching what's happening to the earth is also bringing out a great deal of fear in people. So how is fear and grief related? How are they related to each other?
Yeah, huh. How are fear and grief related to each other? In the Truth Circle, that's the grief ritual that I do from the work that reconnects, there's a space for both. So in that ritual, there's clearly a space for anger, a space for fear, a space for sorrow and grief, and a space for emptiness. These are the four that Joanna chose to highlight. And I haven't actually asked her why, but I think they often come together in times of sorrow. And so when people have the opportunity to touch on all four, it's often a dance between all four, that anger will come up and then all of a sudden, oh, then it switched to sorrow. Oh, whoa, now I'm like, I feel the fear coming up with it. And so it's quite beautiful to see people dance between all four, and then sometimes also express emptiness of like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm just in this empty place. And just to have a space to acknowledge that.
Well, I think what you've outlined is that all of these emotions are a very complex stew of emotions. And I also think in all of the years I've been involved in activism, the people I've known, it's activism is very much in our heads. We want to solve problems with policy papers through reason, through logic, through discourse, that kind of thing. So how does your approach deal with that cutting through the intellect to get to the deeper feelings?
Yeah, so they all intermingle. So for example, to follow up on that question, I think there's obviously a lot of fear involved in a lot of our work is motivated from fear. Like, I don't want the earth to be in trouble, and it deeply alarms me, and I'm scared, and therefore I want to do. And underlying that, though, is grief already, right? I'm so sad that this might happen, and that things are already happening. And then you can jump to anger is also called as like a surface emotion, that a lot of us jump to anger if we feel safe to do so. And underlying that anger actually is a lot of sadness, is a lot of grief. And so in our activist work, we could also jump to anger, which is more of a surface feeling. And if we allow ourselves to sink deeper, underneath that is often pain and sorrow and sadness, and also that emptiness that I was talking about. And so giving people space to show up, so in a bodied way. So what I do is a lot of breathing. And in the grief ritual, there's a lot of slowing down. So for example, even when people introduce themselves, in between each introduction is some breathing, just to take in the echo of each thing that happens, and to give space for the body to sink in through breath each step of the way. And then also teaching grounding practices like shaking. We shake a lot. We make sound. We wiggle our fingers and toes, and to continually bring down into the body. It is a practice. It isn't, you know, come to this grief ritual and you will be in your drop into your body. It is a practice. And in a community setting, we each feed each other. And so, and that is what's the strength of a community, that doing it on your own may take more practice than showing up in a community space where that is the intention of the community, and just in each other's presence helps us sink. And I would also say vulnerability. When we see people be vulnerable, it immediately has an effect on our bodies. We immediately, our nervous systems relax. We feel more empathy, more compassion, and we feel an opening, like a reaching out, a wanting to reach out to the other person, and a softening in our bodies. So that really helps too. And it encourages other people to also feel safe enough to also go there and entertain some of the deeper feelings that are happening in the body.
So a lot of your work then is based on not talking, I would imagine. What's the ratio of talking to not talking? The reason why I ask is because the way that people have been trained to deal with their emotions is, you know, through talk therapy. How do you work between the verbal and the nonverbal?
Yeah. So it's inviting everything and knowing that, you know, there are close to 8 billion people in the world. So there are close to 8 billion, at least, ways of showing what's in you to express, whether that be sorrow, joy, grief, whatever. So really spelling out for myself in the grief rituals, really spelling out that we're learning to grieve and we're learning to grieve together in a community. And so really encouraging people, lots of choice. And that includes really spelling out when you are expressing any of your emotions, you could say it through a poem. You know, you can sing, you can speak in another language, you could say nothing, you can just scream. Like there's so many options, and make it your own. You could lie on the ground, you can sit up, you can make art with the things that are in front of you. And then I actually have recently said, for some people, because we are such a talk culture, it does help to not speak, or you can make sounds instead of making words. And I've seen people actually experiment with them with this and report that it was actually deeply moving, especially people who say that they're usually such talkers and that's what they're used to doing, that when they try a different approach, that it was actually more than enough, and they're surprised with how fulfilling it actually was for them.
In terms of people who are working with trying to create change in the world around climate justice, then what can your work bring to them that they might not have experienced before and could lead to some different ways of working?
So often the thing with grief is that it's an alchemical process. And so how you enter is usually not how you leave the space. That in allowing your body and allowing your heart to actually be with grief and letting grief move you, a lot can happen. So a lot of people experience joy. You know, you don't really think of that, but after going through a process of grief, there's actually a lightness around it and a new way of seeing the world. So Joanna teaches in her work that first we acknowledge our gratitude. Then we move into our despair for the world, and that's where a grief ritual would fit in. And after something like that, often people move into what she calls seeing with new eyes, that you can leave the space with new insights and a deep, deep understanding of how alike we are or can be in our shared depth of caring and love for the world. And to have a deeply embodied experience of that can really change your motivation behind everything and can change how you then move forth in the world. And so for an activist, we're often told, and in many ways in the world beyond activism, these are the steps to doing this, this, and that. And there's kind of a template and what we're taught, how we should do things and how we need to move in the world. But going through something like a grief ritual there's this, a new place where creative action can be seated. When, if you allow yourself to move to a place of emptiness, embodied emptiness, where you're just like, I have tried and I just don't know what to do anymore. And to be witnessed and held in that, that actually creates the fertile ground for new ideas to be planted, to discover new seeds moving forward. And so a lot of people come out of it being like, wow, you know, I have a new vision now.
So I was about to ask you for a checklist or template or whatever, where people who are listening on their own could start to get from that place, from grief to hope. But it doesn't sound like it's quite that easy, is it?
I caution in giving a checklist, because a checklist, again, brings us into a heady space, right? Step one, step two, step three. And that's not the way grief works. Grief can be a trickster. And I think grief has a deeper wisdom beyond the mind. And so a checklist does not work for grief. There can be intentions. So, for example, to create a practice where you create space in your life each day to be with whatever emotions are up for you. So you could create space to be like, what are the things that have deeply affected me today in terms of sorrow or anger or fear or emptiness? And go from there. And that could be a journaling practice. That could be something that you spend some time coming across these things that have brought you these emotions, and then you can dance it through, you know, lots of different ways. But again, keeping with the somatics, keeping with a body-based practice. And writing, you could argue, is a more mind-based practice, but I would encourage something like free writing, where you set a timer for maybe 10 minutes and you just do not stop moving your hand. Anything that comes, just keep going, keep writing, keep writing. And so you don't jump into the mind. You're just letting all the thoughts and emotions out onto the page.
Just thinking this through myself too, it seems to me that one of the key points is to, for us to acknowledge that grief is what we feel. And yeah, it's really easy when getting involved in words, essentially, and plans, and trying to articulate what's wrong, for us to not acknowledge that, hey, this is the way I'm feeling.
Yeah. And the beauty of grief and allowing us to grieve, ourselves to grieve, is that the more we open ourselves to feeling any emotion, it opens up the rest of all the emotions. So the more we allow ourselves to feel grief, the more we can also be available for joy and excitement and appreciating the beauty of the world and the gratitude we have for it. And so it can seem like a scary space to move into, and it's incredible when you do, because grief is a part of life and living. And so in saying yes to grief, you're saying yes to the complexity and beauty of all of life. And so it opens you up to all of that, which includes joy and gratitude and happiness. And so I found that to be a huge gift of grief, is that I am living a more ably feeling life and more embodied life because I allowed myself to move into grief.
Was an interview from 2020 featuring Victoria Fenner and Alisa Lee. If you'd like to listen to the original episode, please see the link in our show notes, or for all of you listening on radio, visit rabble.ca. Switching gears now, let's review the top stories of rabble.ca in a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, let's turn things over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week in labor news, a new report authored in partnership with Canadian Union of Public Employees, Ontario Council of Hospital Unions, is shining a light on the impacts that understaffing is having on those working in Ontario's healthcare system. The qualitative report shares the findings from interviews with 26 hospital workers across the province. It shows that healthcare workers are experiencing high levels of anger, distrust, stress, and despair. Of those surveyed, almost 80% of respondents said that they are lacking confidence in the government's ability to improve the healthcare system. A document obtained by the Canadian Press earlier this year showed the government predicts the province will need 33,200 more nurses and 50,853 more personal support workers by 2032. In health news, Joyce Arthur, the founder of the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada, shared an op-ed with Rabble where she calls out doctors who hide behind the practice of conscientious objection to avoid providing health care to patients seeking an abortion. Arthur explains the history of conscientious objectors and how it originated with soldiers who refused to be conscripted to fight in war. In the article, Arthur argues that a doctor's right to their beliefs does not outweigh their responsibility to provide health care to their patients. The very term, conscientious objection, Arthur argues, is dishonest, and instead she feels it would be more accurate to term this behavior as belief-based denial of care. For years, Arthur and the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada have lobbied provincial medical associations to crack down on doctors who are denying abortion care to their patients. And finally, real estate investment trusts, or REITs, are actively contributing to Canada's housing crisis. In a new article on Rabble.ca, Doreen Nickel explains how they are also exacerbating the crisis in long-term care facilities in Ontario. REITs are for-profit entities aimed entirely at increasing dividends for their shareholders. Some private for-profit companies that manage long-term care facilities are also major shareholders in REITs. One such long-term care company is Extendicare. Extendicare operates Orchard Villa in Pickering, Ontario. That facility saw more than 70 deaths during the COVID-19 pandemic, with things getting so bad that the Canadian forces had to be called in. According to Nickel's reporting, thanks to REITs, affordable housing in Ontario is disappearing at 15 times the rate of replacement. Without an affordable place to live, this is leading some seniors into the difficult decision of leaving their homes and moving into long-term care. As always, you can read all the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and now on YouTube. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.